I'm Bob Franklin. My guest is Charlene Wexler. She's the author of Murder on Skid Row, a novel that we will be featuring today on Like It Is. How are you, Mrs. Wexler?
I'm fine, and I'd like to thank you for allowing me to do this interview with you.
Well, let's talk about right now Murder on Skid Row, based on a true story. What was your inspiration for writing this novel, and does it have societal parallels to current day Chicago or perhaps to the United States in general?
Well, I actually wrote this novel 14 years ago. It was my first book. I now have a publisher and he's republishing a lot of my books. My husband's a dentist. He went to school at the University of Illinois. I don't know if you're familiar with Chicago at all. The school is located not far from the Skid Row area. And we knew two pharmacists were killed in a crazy manner, one right after the other with a, it was just a crazy manner. They found the kid who did the murders, but it was more who hired him that was important. And my husband knew about this. And he was a dentist, and he tried to open an office in Skid Row, which was right near the University of Illinois. He thought he would help the people. He was young and that he could help the people in the area. And we didn't stay there very long, probably about 6 months. And this murder took place. And this was back in the 60s, late 60s, when I started writing. He suggested, why don't you write that murder up about our experiences, short experiences on Skid Row. So that's really what I did. And it's relevant today because Skid Row was an area of homeless people. Most of them were veterans from Vietnam. And it has relevance today because we're dealing with the homeless everywhere. So it has, I would say it's very relevant today.
Which is your novel is told from Dr. Mel Greenberg's point of view. Tell us why and who Dr. Mel Greenberg was and his importance in your work and in the novel.
Okay. My husband, as I said, is a dentist. He graduated from the University of Illinois. 1964, which was near that area. My son's a dentist, friends are dentists, so I did the novel from the viewpoint of a dentist. Skid Row, the word Skid Row comes from the logging industry, actually. It was a bottom skid on the row of logs. So many cities or areas have skid rows, and that's because it's considered the bottom of society, where you've just bottomed out and are living on nothing and on a lot of drugs and a lot of alcohol. One difference I could say from the skid rows in the 60s than from today, you didn't have the immigrants. Most of it were veteran, actually Vietnam, veterans that got hooked on alcohol or got hooked on drugs. And they came, a lot of them came from good families, and they just couldn't handle life afterwards.
Dr. Greenberg opened his office on Skid Row, and there was a reason for opening his office there. So can you delve a little bit and talk a bit about the location of his office on Skid Row, the importance of it?
Okay, the location of his office was in a building with a pharmacy, was called drugstore in the 60s, but with a pharmacy on the first floor, with two pharmacists that one of them he knew. And actually, he opened his office there to do something for the poor people that were around. Very idealistic at the time, and to get some experience before opening up in a neighborhood where you had to be perfect with your clients. So it was kind of an experience, and it was to help the people in the area. What he didn't know, there were a lot of games going on between pharmacists and doctors in the area, where pharmacists would pay for scripts. They would give a lot of doctors free rent. The drugstore, it's in the story, owned the building and gave the dentist free rent for a year. And there was another doctor in the building too. Now I have to tell you, this is historical fiction. Done a lot in the story to make it more interesting as a novel.
Well, I think you paint a very good picture, but I'd like for you to paint this picture for the audience. Let's go back to 1960s Chicago Skid Row. Paint a picture for our audience what they would have seen if they were walking through or walking past or walking down streets and on Skid Row. I know you started to describe that, but describe it a little more. Tell us a little bit more about what we would be seeing on Skid Row, if we could transverse back there now.
Okay, this Skid Row area was Madison and Halsted. It was near an expressway. There were old buildings. It had been around for years. It had prostitutes, it had gangs in the area, it had just people that were down and out, lived in slop houses. These were buildings where they'd put 50 beds in there, and for 50 cents a piece, you could sleep overnight in the bed. But you really had to watch your belongings because people would roll you and steal your money. The drugstore served as almost a home for them. In the drugstore, they could cash their welfare checks or any money they had. They could get. Like it would be almost like a bank. They could get loans from the pharmacists. They actually were helping them, but at the same time, they were getting the doctors and dentists to write more scripts. And the patient would come down to the drugstore with a prescription and get a bottle of booze, and the pharmacist could send in for the money on a script. There were not too many stores. You had a pawn shop, pretty much. You had the building with the doctor, the dentist, and the pharmacist on the first floor. You had these old hotels that at one time belonged to the mob or were very fancy hotels, were 50, 60 years old. They still had old toilets, and some didn't even have running water, and that's where you could stay, like I said, for 50 cents a night. I have added on, to some of the buildings. I put a restaurant in that probably wasn't there, to make it more interesting. But pretty much a lot of vacant lots and gangs that, like do a lot of drug dealing. Because they were right by the expressway. You had very few police around. They kind of knew that was the area and it went on, and they didn't bother anybody much.
And in the midst of that picture that you just painted, Dr. Greenberg was there, his office was there, and he was trying to be a kind-hearted soul by providing dental therapists to patients. But something happened and he became a suspect. Can you tell us a little bit about what were the circumstances that caused Mel to become a suspect and, of all things, a double murder?
Okay, the double murder. Okay, I go into a lot of characters in the book.
I want to come to that next. I want you
Okay,
to
all
introduce
right.
some of the
Let
audience.
me get in on the double murder. The murder, the kid that murdered the two pharmacists was on drugs. He owed money for drugs, and he got paid by somebody to do the murders. He actually liked the pharmacists. They were always helping him and there for him. But he got where if he didn't pay his drug deals. So he worked for Dr. Greenberg. He worked for Dr. Greenberg, and his girlfriend worked for Dr. Greenberg. So that's how the doctor became a suspect. But I think almost everybody in the area was a suspect. More important than this kid that did the murder was the reason why and who hired him. And if I go into that, you've got most of the books.
Right.
Let you buy it to find that out.
Right, absolutely.
And
so
when
they
do find that out, there's an interesting court scene in the book.
Okay, well, we won't spoil the ending here, but I would like to have you take as much time as you need to introduce to our audience some of the characters featured in Murder on Skid Row. And let's start with Ace.
Okay. Ace was, a lot of these characters were smart and they had been not bums in another life. They just fell down the Skid Row to the bottom ring and got hooked, you know, drugs or on alcohol. And Ace was pretty much a character I came up with based on some knowledge of the area. And he was a good friend of the pharmacist, and he was very smart in figuring out how to make money. And that's what he did with Mel Greenberg. He made a deal with the dentist that I bring you patients, you pay me. And he kind of moved around with his belongings all at all times, because if you didn't take your belongings with, they'd be gone.
Right. Ace is referenced as someone who could flick a billfold from a pocket faster than a squirrel.
I was just going to say, you know, he walked off with stuff that belonged to the dentist. He was very good at stealing stuff without you knowing. And that's what my reference was. He could faster than a squirrel.
Very good. Very good on that one. Darlene, tell us about Darlene.
Okay, Darlene was a sad character because she got hooked with Tyrone, who was a drug addict and a bum in the area, locked up with the gangs. And she got hooked up with Tyrone, but otherwise she was just came from a poor family and she was trying to find a way to make some money. And she became the doctor's assistant. And she was very good at acting like she knew everything, but she didn't. She was liking, I don't know if you, there was an autoclave where you'd clean your teeth, clean the instruments from the dental, and the doctor found her cooking a chicken in it because she couldn't plug it in. So he really had to, he actually taught her, actually realized that she needed a lot more work. And he also, she saved his life later when Tyrone, when the guy that killed the pharmacist was trying to use him as a hostage to get away. And she saved the doctor's life. But she was a good character that didn't have money, her family didn't. And that got stuck in a poor, you know, area with all the, you know, I'm trying to think of the word. I'm 81. I can't remember everything that well.
You're fine.
But she really ended up saving the doctor's life. And he helped her to stay out of jail because she was then a suspect working with Tyrone, who did the murders.
And Tyrone was Mel's bodyguard, right?
Yes, but only because he was Darlene's boyfriend. And as Mel says there, he realized when he first got there, he'd lose a tire, he'd lose a battery from the car, that he's better off having the bodyguards, paying the bodyguards, and then they'd watch his area than have them steal things from him. He was a naive, middle-class young man that a whole new world opened up to, that he hadn't realized what the world was like and what people, suffered and people were mean, you know. And people
And
took advantage of the suffering.
you're referring to Dr. Greenberg as
Right.
naive.
Right. It's naive.
Abe, tell us about Abe.
Abe. Okay. Abe, my father was a pharmacist, so I had fun with Abe, you know, too, and with describing the drugstore. Both Abe and his partner, Dave. Dave, I'm going to back up just a little bit on Dave first. Dave was strictly there. He did all the paperwork. He really didn't care about the people there. He wanted to get in, get out, go home into a different atmosphere. He got stuck in a partnership with a friend that he knew for 60 years. Abe grew up in the West Side. I don't know if you've heard of Maxwell Street in Chicago. It was an area where immigrants came, mainly Jewish, when they came from Europe. And it was a poor area where they had push carts, they sold food, they sold everything on the streets. And he was born there and he grew up. Okay, I'll get back to Abe. I probably modeled him a little bit after my father because he was outgoing. He was really there for two reasons. One, he didn't get out of the area where he grew up. This Maxwell Street was is famous in Chicago for, you know, if you look it up, it was a famous area from 1900 on for immigrants to gather in. And he never really left there, even though he made money, married somebody that had money, lived in a beautiful house. He was freer in Skid Row and Maxwell Street. And he helped his customers, and he felt for them at the same time he was making money off of them too, where Dave was just there to get in and get out. And when Abe was shot, most of the customers, they just were horrified and upset because they lost the only friend they had in the area.
Jim Bones, you had mentioned earlier that some of the people on Skid Row were Vietnam vets. Talk a bit about Jim Bones.
Okay, I really didn't know a Jim Bones. I made him up, but I knew, you know, people that had gone to the bottom, people that had been alcoholics and had gone to the bottom of the bin before picking up and getting. So I wanted to show that not everybody on Skid Row was dumb or poor or was no good. And that's what I tried with most of the characters, you know, that I put into the book, that I wanted to show that, you know, right away we condemn people, they had a problem and they didn't get help. And Jim Bones was from a very rich family. I mean, he's a made-up character, but there were characters like him on Skid Row, and there are now in homelessness. Or characters, I did know somebody that was an alcoholic and pulled himself back. He came from a family that disowned him. He came back from Vietnam. He got hooked on drugs and he wouldn't let anyone help him. But he was very smart and he had gone through college. And, you know, my idea for his character is what I said. I wanted to show that, you know, not everybody is looked down upon, you know, or that we should, you know, that there are characters from that are smart, that come from well families. His family just wanted nothing to do with him because he was shaming them.
Well, and you do a beautiful job in terms of really pulling together a tapestry of all the types of people who, for reasons not maybe beyond their control, happen to be in the Skid Row area. I want to quote Guy Thomas, who wrote a pretty interesting statement with reference to you. He hosts several of British websites that feature your essays and short stories. He writes, "I read lots of articles and stories, but Charlene is one of only four authors who make me think. I wish I could write as well as that. That's quite a compliment. In terms of reading the excerpts from Murder on Skid Row, it does make you think as a reader. And as I've been reading it, it helps to paint a picture in my mind of that particular period. And I'm just interested to know, as you write and you are putting your words on paper that present images in readers' mind, where did that skill come from?
That's a hard question. I wrote for myself for a long time. I lost a son to leukemia. We suffered from 8 to 5 years with it. So I think that gave me probably a different way of looking at the world. And that's where I started my writing. I wrote for myself first, and my sister encouraged me to start putting it out. And my first novel, I tried to write about him and I couldn't. But I found if I put it in a novel, it's easier to write. And I like people and I'm always watching people. I don't have training in writing, but I was a grade school teacher in my first life. Don't know what else to say about it.
Well, you are.
I've been told in all my books that I do great character, descriptions. And if you want, I can send you Farewell to South Shore.
I would like that as we run toward the end of our interesting conversation here. I want to just talk about come back to Skid Row, and Chicago's Skid Row is long gone, replaced by gentrification.
Right.
In your view, is there today a cultural or historical significance for Chicago residents who should remember that they should remember something about Skid Row?
I would think so. I think it's hidden. I think it's kind of hard to find anything about it because the area is a beautiful area now, and an expensive area with shops. And on the main where the drugstore stood, there's a famous 39-story glass building. Well, I'm one that likes history anyway. I mean, I think that we're defined by our history. And I think right now a lot of people are all upset about homelessness and they treat it like it's brand new, not like it was going on before, not maybe on the same scale. But the problem has been with us. I think when I looked up Skid Row on Madison and Halsted, there used to be a train in early 1900 that went through there and ended there. And that's where a lot of the occupants ended up staying. They'd be taking the railroad or hiking on it. So, yes, I think definitely, the history is important.
And what would you like readers to get from Murder on Skid Row? What do you want them to take from that novel after reading it as the author? What would you like for them to take from that work?
Well, first of all, I'd like them to, you know what? I'm 81. I'd like anybody that wants to write realize it's not too late or wants to do something, go after your passion. And the second one from Murder on Skid Row, I'd like people to be a little bit kinder and to other people and not constantly blame them. Realize everybody's got a story and not everybody's had it easy. Otherwise, thank you for the interview and a chance to talk about it. And then I'd like them to read the book and find out who really was behind the killings.
I like that. We didn't spoil the ending here. We
Okay. I have
Char
to tell you one thing with the killings. They were one after another. The first killing was because he got the wrong person. He came back and killed the right one he was paid for.
That's enough of a tease.
Okay.
My guest today has been Charlene Wexler. She is the author of the novel Murder on Skid Row. Thank you, Mrs. Wexler, for taking time today.
And thank you for inviting me.
If you ever find yourself away from your favorite radio station, you can find this episode of Like It Is and many more on your favorite podcast app. I want to thank listeners who have kept Like It Is on air for 30 years. I'm here for you, and I want to hear from you. Send me a message on www.greenthumbfoundationinc.com. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.